And welcome to Artifacts. I'm your host, Marissa Dickens, and today's guest is professional dancer Fabio Mariano.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on Artifacts. I discovered Fabio and his work through the Dance Edit newsletter. There's a recent article about you, and I discovered you do a lot of things. So not only are you a professional dancer with the Collage Dance Company in Memphis, but you're also one of the co-founders of Blacks in Ballet, and you have your own crochet business going on called Fabiola's Crochets. Is there anything you don't do?
I try to split myself between different things, you know, keep myself with different focuses so I'm not like just going one way. I think that's important.
I totally get it. And I wanted to have you on because I admired your passion and activism within the dance community. And you have just so many roles. But where did your love of dance begin?
My love for dance started when I was 14 years old. Up to then, I didn't really know anything about dance. And then when I was about 14, me and my family had just moved to another town. And I was just looking for another activity to do outside of regular school and just looking for things. I found dance and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. Maybe I can try that out. And I decided that I wanted to try ballet, classical ballet. And it was a lot of fear because there's this prejudice against classical ballet and man, don't do ballet, you know, this whole thing that is still very much a thing in the world, in our society nowadays, even though we shouldn't. So I was so afraid, but I was like, you know, I really want to do this. I really want to try it out. So let me talk to my father and see what he thinks. And my dad was super supportive. He was like, yeah, if you want to try it out, go try it. If you like it, great. If you don't, then you try something else. And I was like, oof, okay, my dad says I can try ballet, so let me go. I went and I tried it. What sparked the interest in me, it was a TV show that we had in Brazil, a soap opera that was going on in Brazil. And there was a cast that was a part of like a dance school in the soap opera. So there was always some ballet scenes in the show. And that was what sparked my interest the most. And then once I took my first couple of ballet classes, I was like, oh my God, I really love this. And I just kept going from there.
What specifically about ballet drew you in? Was it the physicality of it, the beauty behind it? Like, what drew you in?
I think the things that drew me in the most were the detail, how the technique is so detailed, how everything is like specific, the physicality of it, of course, and how much it takes physically to do it. And I think just the beauty of it too. I just think it's such a beautiful art form and the things that we create as ballet dancers with our bodies. So I think those were the main things that drew me in at first.
I think people forget that dance and ballet is a sport and there's just so much behind it.
It's a lot of hard work. I think most people don't realize when they're just audience members, people don't realize how much effort it takes on a body to make that just look magical and soft and simple and delicate. It might look like that, but it actually takes a lot of effort, you know. Mm-hmm. If we don't put all that effort, it just looks rough.
Yep. Mm-hmm. For me it's the most rewarding to watch, I think, and to dance, because the payoff is so great for me.
Yeah.
So you are from Brazil. What is the dance culture, especially growing up in Brazil? Because I know now you're in the U.S., but what is it like?
Yeah, it's a little rough, I think. It's still very, I think it's delayed in a way, the way that it has been developed. I grew up going to a very small ballet school for like the first 2 years that I started dancing. I was going to a very small ballet school. Dance school really wasn't really focused on ballet. until I eventually decided that I wanted to pursue that as possibly a career. Then I started going to another school that would prepare me better as a classical ballet dancer. It was pretty hard because, in general, the arts are not very supported in Brazil. And of course, there are the art forms that will be more supported. So, let's say carnival, which is a huge thing in Brazil, is actually going on right now. Of course, there's a lot of money that goes into carnival, and it's an incredible art that happens every year in Brazil. But there are other art forms too that don't always get the attention. A lot of money goes into acting in the soap operas and the TV because people love it. But other art forms like classical music, classical ballet, contemporary dance, some other art forms, they don't always get the most attention. And I think that's, normal in the world. It's the type of art there's, it has more of a specific audience, and it's just not for everybody. That's fine. But I still think there should be support and incentive, especially from the government, into it, because it is a path for a lot of people. How many people have we seen stories that, well, I don't know if you've seen it or if people here in the US have seen it, but in Brazil, we have so many stories of people who came from poor families or from favelas, which are poor communities in Brazil, and they just break into this incredible career as a ballet dancer, as a classical musician in an orchestra, or as, so many different things. So it shows how important it is to support the arts in general. So it wasn't as supported when I was growing up. It has definitely gotten a little better, but we have a long way to go. Compared to here, to the US, I didn't notice a huge difference. And that's actually one of the reasons why I moved here, because when I was in Brazil, I was already working professionally. I graduated from the professional ballet school in 2014. And at the same year, I was able to join a ballet company there. And I started working in this company. I worked with this company for 2 years. And I had auditions for all the ballet companies that were in the country for me to audition, which wasn't many, but the ones that was an option for me, I auditioned. And then I got this one. But after 2 years, the company was struggling to survive and to keep the dancers and to keep shows going on, because there was just not enough support from the government or from sponsorships or anything. And then when it was election time, I believe, for governor in Rio, and the first thing they did was like, oh, we need money for campaign. Where can we take money from? The arts. So that was when the company had to literally shut down. And at the time, like I mentioned, I had already auditioned for so many companies. So I was like, well, I better try somewhere else. So I decided to come here to the US. And when I started looking more into it, I realized that almost every city has a ballet company. Some bigger, some smaller, but every city has a little ballet company, a little school, or a dance company. If it's not ballet, it's a contemporary dance company, So in every state, I haven't done a thorough research, but in every state, there is some type of dance company, which is not the reality in Brazil. Brazil is almost as big as the US, and we don't have even half as many ballet companies or dance companies in the country. So that was interesting to me. I was like, wow, I can literally audition for a company everywhere in the US. And I did.
Yes.
So that was a big difference to me. And it still is. Brazil has a long way to go.
That's interesting to hear because I think as someone who's from the US, I take it for granted that we do have dance in every state and it's a little more integrated than it would be in a different country. So that's interesting to hear that from your perspective. What was it like coming to the US?
The transition was not easy, to be honest. There was a lot of work that went into it. When I first came here, I went to New York City to audition. I just had savings, and I got my savings and I paid for my trip to New York City. I stayed there for a month and I auditioned to as many companies as I could. But unfortunately, the biggest barrier is a visa. That is the biggest thing because I actually got offered a lot of opportunities, which was great, and I was excited about it. But most of them couldn't offer me a visa. So they would offer me an opportunity, but when we get to the conversation where it's about visa, can you offer me a visa? They were like, oh no, we can't. So offer is withdrawn. So I was like, oh my, so what am I gonna do? There was one company that was able to offer me support to make a visa if I paid for it, which is a very expensive process. And that was the opportunity that I took because it was the only option. I was like, well, I have to do it. But then it's another aspect that is very hard. It is, how am I going to make enough money to pay for that and to pay for the trip and to relocate my entire life to this other country? The job offer wasn't very great. I wasn't getting paid a lot. That was just very difficult. But it's so interesting because when things are meant to be, they're just meant to be. And until this day, I'm shocked how things happened. I remember being in Brazil after I came to New York City. I came to New York City in March and I stayed here through the entire month of March. And then I went back to Brazil. And about 2 weeks later, the director of this company emailed me back and she was like, hey, we have a production going on, I think like in May, and we would like for you to come back and maybe be a part of that production. We can see you better. We can possibly offer you a contract for next season. And I was like, oh, that would be great. But how am I going to get there? I just spent all my savings this trip, you know? And I didn't know what to do. And then I got another offer for a summer intensive. And for that, I got a full scholarship with room and board and everything. But I still had to get there. So I was like, what am I going to do? I just gathered all the little money and support from people around me. And I was able to go back to the US and do all of that. But it seems like easier said than done. But until like the week before I came to the US, I didn't know how I was gonna make it. I didn't know I was coming. I literally didn't know I was coming. But people just started moving things around, and people in my hometown started moving things around and asking for people. And then all of a sudden, I have the newspaper calling me and putting my story in the newspaper, and I'm going on TV, and TV channels are calling me and interviewing me. And people are literally messaging me on Facebook and they're like, hey, here's $1,000. Hey, here's. And I'm like, what? What is going on? So that was very touching because there was so many people just like ready to support, you know, just amazed by the story. People who had never seen me in my life and they just saw me on the news and they're like, hey, I just wanted to give your plane ticket. Here it is. I was like, wow. So, you know, that's why I say when things are meant to be, they're meant to be. So I was able to come here and I lived in New Jersey at first. I moved to New Jersey. That's where the company was. So one thing that it wasn't very much a barrier was the language, because I had been studying English since I was about 15. So at the time, I was pretty much fluent in English. It just took me a little bit of time to adjust and get used to like accent and stuff like that. So I didn't have the language barrier, which was good. I missed my family a lot. I had never lived that far for that long away from my family. So that was really rough.
When you came to the US, how old were you?
I was 23, 22 or 23.
Yeah, okay, it's young.
Yeah. But at the time, I came with my girlfriend. So it was good that I wasn't completely by myself. So we comforted each other. So yeah, and I just adjusted with time.
To pursue your dream, like you have to work for it, and that's so great that you had the support of your community. Talk about how you got involved with the Collage Dance Company, and what does a typical day look like for you as a professional dancer?
Yeah, like I mentioned, I moved to New Jersey first. And I was working there with this company, with Atlantic City Ballet in Atlantic City. So I was working there for a year. It was about 2 hours and a half away from New York City. So when it was audition season, or whenever there was auditions in New York, I would go up to New York and audition for companies. And that's what I did for Collage. I went to New York and I auditioned for Collage. Collage was still a very young dance company. I didn't know anything about it, but I saw about it. I was like, okay, I might as well just try. So I did audition for Collage, not expecting much, to be honest. But they just got back to me. They invited me to come to Memphis to get to know me more. And I ended up getting an offer to move here. And it was a pretty good offer. It was a good opportunity. And I was like, yeah, I'll take it. I really fell in love with the mission of Collage and the great things that they were doing for being a young company. You know, the company was only, the full-time company was only 2 years. It
Wow.
was, they were going into their third season, but things were looking really great. So I was like, yeah, I'll take the opportunity.
Is it
And
both
that's how I,
ballet and contemporary? What's the right,
yeah.
is it a combination or
Yeah, we perform contemporary dance and classical ballet.
okay.
We perform some modern dance works too. A lot of the times the works are, they're not fully modern, but they have a lot of modern elements in them. We have a very diverse rep with modern choreographers, contemporary choreographers, yeah, and classical ballet. So it's a big mixture. But yeah, that's how I got into Collage, and the company has just grown tremendously, and it has just been amazing to be here. I've worked with so many choreographers, like I mentioned, from different backgrounds and different styles. So usually we work from Monday through Friday. It's our 9-to-5 job. So we work from Monday through Friday, except when we have performances or when we're on tour, because that changes the schedule according to what we're doing. But usually we start the day with a warm up. It's always a classical ballet warm up. Sometimes if you have a choreographer, they might do a contemporary warm up or a modern warm up, but most of the times it's ballet class. We usually have an hour and a half ballet class and we have a little break. We go into rehearsals, and it depends on what we're preparing for. If we're preparing for our fall season, then we're going to be working on the ballets that we have coming up for that show or for the shows that we're doing on tour. We do get a lot of choreographers in to work with us. So most of the time we have at least one choreographer here in Memphis with us setting a work or choreographing a new work. It just depends. Yeah, it gets very busy. Sometimes we have two, three choreographers and we're like, oh my, how are we gonna do this? But it's exciting at the same time because it's just so much. But yeah, that's how a day usually goes.
It's nice to have different voices come in and you learn differently and get new repertoire. That's always exciting. It keeps you on your toes, I'm sure.
Yes, definitely. It just stretch our, not only our bodies, but our minds so much, because choreographers have so different languages, so different, you know, point of views. So sometimes we have to shift gears completely from one work to another. So we, in the morning, we have a rehearsal with one type of choreographer, and then we have to shift gears completely to the afternoon. So it's very good for our diversity, to diversify our work.
And how do you even keep, because your body is like your job and your mental health, like your body health and your mental health, because you're dancing 24/7. Like how do you personally maintain the health of yourself?
Yes. Oh, that is a hard one because I feel like we're always playing catch up with that. All dancers, it's always very hard, you know. I recently just had to go through surgery because dance, it just takes a toll on your body, you know. It's really rough on the body. So I am actually still recovering from surgery. I'm not fully back to dancing yet. I like to make sure that I'm eating really well. That is one important thing to me. I have to make sure that I don't follow a strict diet. A lot of dancers will, they have strict diets, but I don't. I just make sure that I am eating healthy enough, and then I'm having a very well balanced meal, that I'm keeping myself, you know, fueled with good things. Because, like you mentioned, my body is my tool and I need that very well energized. Rest is extremely important. When I'm doing a lot of work, especially when I'm doing a lot of ballet work, I like to ice my feet as soon as I finish working. I feel like it's the most effective. My crochet is escape valve for me too. It's something that I stop and it just puts my mind on something else. So that is one of my favorite hobbies, to just stop, get my yarn and my hook and just crochet, and my mind is off of all the other things, all the other choreographies. I'm over there crocheting, usually listening to something or watching something. I like watching TV and crocheting.
Let's talk about your crochet hobby. So, how did that start? And what do you make? Because this is cool. I saw lots of them. I want one. They're great.
So I started crochet when I first moved to New Jersey. I moved to New Jersey and it wasn't winter yet. It was fall, but it was already getting really cold. And I'm from Rio de Janeiro, so there's no winters like here in the US. It's most of the time it's summer in Brazil. It gets chilly every now and then, but never like winter here. So I didn't have a lot of winter clothes. I knew I was coming here, so I got something. Some people gave some stuff to me, but I still didn't have much. And especially dancewear, I didn't have much because it was always hot in Brazil when we were dancing. So we had shorts and tank tops all the time when we were dancing. So when I got here, I started feeling the need of having more like leg warmers and warmers to keep myself just warm. When I got to the studio, it was always freezing. And that didn't help with injuries and taking care of your body, you know, making sure that your body's warm before you do stuff. And I couldn't really afford to buy stuff either. So there was a coworker of mine at the time that she used to crochet. And every time she had a little break, she was in the corner of the studio just crocheting. And that piqued my attention. I was like, oh, what if I did that? So I asked her one time, I was like, hey, can you teach me how to crochet? And she was like, sure. And then she got me my first hook and my first yarn, and she taught me my first stitches. And I just got so intrigued by it. I was like, oh, wow, this is really interesting. It really catches your attention and it tests your patience too, because it's really difficult in the beginning. I'm not gonna lie. After you get used to it, it's like riding a bike, you won't forget it. But in the beginning, it was really hard. I just got so into it and I wouldn't stop. Every time I wasn't dancing, I was with my crochet, just trying to figure it out and perfect it. I started watching videos on YouTube. I found that there was so many tutorials on YouTube, and I just started making stuff for myself. There was definitely not tutorials on how to make leg warmers for dancers on YouTube. You know, there are a lot of other stuff, but not dancewear. And since that's what I wanted, I started figuring out for myself. So I made some very ugly stuff in the beginning, just figuring it out. And I just started perfecting it with time. It wasn't until I got to Memphis. At that time, I was crocheting for about a year. And people were like, oh, this is so cool. Can I have one? Can I have one? And I was just making them. And I was like, sure. And I would give them to people. And then the executive director of the company at the time was like, do you sell your stuff? I was like, no, not really. I just make them. And he was like, why are you not selling it? And I was like, huh, you're right. I was like, yeah, you need to sell this. So that's when it sparked, you know, the idea for me to make a business out of it. Started, and I created my name, and I created the Instagram, and I started sharing more about it, and people just loved it, and I just started making from there.
I love that because I like to puzzle, and like for me, like puzzling like clears the mind, and I'm sure that's probably similar to crochet. You just like you're trying to put pieces and everything together, and oh my God, that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, I love all those things like puzzling. I don't know if you've heard of paint by number, stuff like that. I love that type of stuff. And I usually get so focused, I cannot think of anything else.
I feel like there's something to be said about like being a detailed dancer translates to other detailed projects, and there's something brainwave that's so similar. For sure.
Yes, I
For sure.
definitely see the connection there.
Yeah, and also balancing, working hard and stress, but like you're also your mental health, and like how to find the balance of taking time for you is probably really important. I want to shift gears and talk about Blacks and ballet, and especially your experiences with diversity, inclusion in ballet. And I'm sure like there's a long way to go. But what is your, first off, your experience with diversity in Brazil with ballet versus America? Are they similar? Do you see some differences in that?
There's a huge difference because in Brazil is a very diverse country to begin with, but you don't see that reflected in the dance world. For sure, you don't. There are not a lot of companies, like I mentioned before, in Brazil, but the little companies there are, they're not reflecting what Brazil look like, which is extremely diverse and extremely colorful. Growing up, there was just that thing that for me, and you can see my skin is very light already. I'm not dark skin, but there was already that fear. Even with the skin this light, there was already that fear. I had to make sure that, I was keeping myself not too tan and always wearing long sleeves and putting your sunscreen on so I don't look a little darker. My nose is already a little big, so I can't look too much off what they're looking for. So there was always that mindset, which it's so crazy how it's so rooted that most of the times we don't even see it as a problem. We just see it as a norm. And that's how I grew up with it. And everybody grew up with it. And all the people who were dark grew up with it was just normal. The girls would go to do Nutcracker and they're putting white pancake all over their bodies because they can't be dark in the court of ballet. They have to look white. So there were those things and nobody was talking about it really. We were just doing it. And for me, it didn't happen for me to figure out how much of an issue that was until much later. Until much, much later, I came to the US, and it was really here in the US that I started seeing how big the issue was. And I think that comes with history, because the history of racism and just the difference between races in Brazil and the US is very different. It's very different. I'm not even talking about the dance world, but just how things happen in general after the end of slavery. The way the path that Brazil took and the path that the US took is very different. And I think it leads to certain things that are different. So coming to the US and just seeing how things were here and how that create a certain mentality here made me look at my country differently and be like, oh wow. So that was really messed up. But, it happened. All we can do now is try to make it better so people don't continue going through what we went through. That is a lot of what we tried to do when we created Blacks in Ballet. There was a lot of attention on dancers, but not on dancers of color. And we wanted to bring that attention to dancers of color. When we started it, we were like, is there really not that many dancers of color? The Brazil is so big and there's so many dancers. What are the dancers of color in Brazil? Why are they not being featured? Why are the main companies in the country not featuring any of these dancers of color? Where are they? And we just started researching and looking for them, and we started finding Brazilian dancers of color all around the world. We had a group chat that had like 20 something people, And we started looking and researching, and we found so many, and that group just grew so much. And we were like, okay, we need to bring these people to the spotlight, just in the sense of like people need to be aware that there are these dancers too, you know? So that's what we did. We started sharing their stories and sharing how they got to dance and how they got to where they are today. There are people who are not even dancing anymore because it's not new. People who are retired nowadays, they're teachers, directors, choreographers. I don't know. So we just created Black Scene Ballet for this to highlight those dancers and show the beauty of dances of color as well in classical ballet, more specifically, because there's also this, I don't know, this point of view that was created. They're like, oh, you would be great in Brazil. We heard that a lot. Oh, you would be great to audition for Alvin Ailey, to audition for Dance Theater of Harlem. Why only those companies? Why can't we be right here? Why can't we be a dancer here in our country, in this company? You know, so that's why we created Black Scene Ballet, because it can be in any ballet company, not just Dance Theater of Harlem.
That's crazy that, ballet has such a long history of just these, like you said, these deeply rooted things that subconsciously we don't think about or question the color of someone's tights or the color of the point shoes or like these classic roles in like Nutcracker that are quite, questionable. And how crazy is it that we're not aware of these like these dancers of color and especially ballet? What has the reception been like since doing Blacks in Ballet?
The reception was surprisingly great. It was really good. We actually started Black Scene Ballet. It was literally probably about a month before the pandemic happened. I think it was February or January or February of 2020. And then it started very slow. We were figuring out what Black Scene Ballet was going to look like. And then soon after the pandemic started and things were shut down and we're locked inside, it just gave us more time to just work on this project. And it was already getting a lot of attention. But then the Black Lives Matter movement got a lot of attention after the assassination of George Floyd. Black Scene Ballet also boomed because it brought a lot of attention to all the matters related to racism. And since we were talking about that, it also brought us to the topics. And it was just talked about in so many areas. So we got a lot of visibility. It was very well received by everybody. People were supporting, people were sharing, people were talking about, people were interested in listening and learning what we were talking about and why were we talking about it and what do we need to do. And what was really nice was that not only individuals, but companies were also hearing and interested. You know, a lot of companies were reaching out and being supportive in so many ways. So that was really nice. You know, that was really nice that people were so open to hear, to learn, and to do the work. Like, there were so many things that started happening after that. Like, companies were reaching out to us to recommend dancers or to talk about audition just for dancers of color or to ask how can we make change, how can we make things happen. There was so many things and so many conversations that happened after we started Black Scene Ballet.
And I have to ask you the question then, how else can we make change, especially whether it's dancers themselves or audience members? What do you think we could do more of to make ballet more inclusive and spread more awareness about it?
The main thing I think is not assuming a standard, you know, because when we hear the word classical, we already assume that it stops growing. It's classical and that's what it is and that's it. And there is a truth to it, you know, it is classical ballet, it's supposed to be a certain way. But we also have to look at what were the things that were created in a time that might have been hurtful to people, because even though we want to keep the classicism of something and we want to keep the tradition of something, We also want to make it inclusive and make it reflect the world that we live in today. So I think the best thing is always be open to things are going to make it for the better. Like the tights and the shoes are a big question because for the longest, it has just been pink tights and pink shoes. So a lot of the times nowadays, people will be like, oh, I thought that's just the tradition. Yeah, it is a tradition. But the root of that tradition is not really the best reason why we wear pink shoes and pink tights. How can we make that less hurtful in a way and just make it more accessible to the society that we live in today and still keep the classicism? We're not changing classical ballet. We're making it more inclusive. So I think just being open to those changes and supporting those changes, supporting those dancers from professional companies and professional schools, offering more opportunities for dancers of color and dancers in less privileged communities that are able to access quality training too, and just supporting them.
People don't like change. We need to create more awareness and more accessibility and pose the questions. That's really exciting that what you guys have done with Blacks in Ballet. Make sure to follow it on Instagram. Love it. Are you ready for some rapid fire questions before we go?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Favorite ballet?
Favorite ballet? Giselle. That is a hard one, but I would say my first favorite.
Favorite song to dance to?
Professionally or just have fun?
Both.
I don't even know why I asked that question because if professionally, I don't know. Well, professionally, I would say Stravinsky music. I know it's vast, but in Stravinsky music is so intricate and it's always so cool to just figure out all the little details and dance to it. Being musicality with Stravinsky music is just incredible. I love it. It takes a lot of work, but I love it. Popular music and regular music, Madonna is my favorite.
I just saw
So
her in
I'm a huge
concert.
fan. Oh,
I just
you
saw
went
her
to the
in,
Celebration tour?
yes, in Detroit. My parents are obsessed. I've seen her a couple times and it was great.
Oh yeah, Madonna is my queen. You know, she's my goddess on earth. I have her tattooed on my wrist.
Oh my gosh. Wait,
Yeah.
what's your favorite Madonna song?
That's a tough one.
Or album?
I would say my favorite album is Confessions on the Dance Floor. It's incredible. But my favorite song, I always love to listen to that song, is Bad Girl. It's from the album Erotica. And she performs that live in the Celebration Tour. So I'm hoping I'm able to make it at some point. So
You need to go. Well, she's a dancer first, and she puts on a show. The
yes.
performance quality is just amazing. Oh my God, it's so funny that you love Madonna. Great. What is the last great book you read?
Yeah, I'm not much of a reader. I don't read. The last few books that I have read, I didn't read. I listened to them. I listened to audiobooks. The last one that really touched me and I really loved was the autobiography of Cecile Tyson. That book was just incredible. That woman was just such an inspiration. I love autobiographies because I love to hear people's perspective and their journey, you know, especially people that came from humble beginnings and had so much to climb to get to where they got. So that was a very inspiring and touching for me. So yeah, Cecile Tyson autobiography, incredible.
Favorite dancer to watch?
Is it cliche that I say Marianela
No.
Nunes? Oh, it's just incredible. There is no denying. I just love watching her. I'm gonna say another one too, because I absolutely love her. Her name is Nina Kaptsova. She's a Russian dancer, and I just love her dancing, her style. Every dancer has their own personality, and I just love hers as well.
What is the best advice you received, and then the best advice you would give?
The one that I like to give the most is do the hard work and it will pay off. You know, it doesn't matter if things are not coming as quick as you would like or when you would like, keep working hard because eventually that hard work will pay off. You know, as long as you're doing good work and doing good things and striving for the best, you will get that back to you. I believe the universe will go around, the world will go around, and those things will come back to you. That's the advice that I like to give the most. The advice that I think that was best given to me is, regardless of other people believing in you or not, you have to believe in yourself. There was so many times, especially when I was in the professional dance school, I just started quitting. You know, I was older, I was late, I was much older than most people graduating in the school. I was an older dancer, you know, in the stage that I was. I started in the professional school at 17 years old. People were graduating at 16. I was like, what am I doing here? So many times I just thought of quitting. Even teachers sometimes wouldn't believe in me. But I did have one teacher that was like, don't think about what the other people believe in yourself. You know, there is a space for you somewhere. Keep going. So that was always a great advice to hear.
I like that one. What has been your most rewarding performance?
Oh, my most rewarding performance. Can it be two?
Yep.
So,
There's no rules in artifacts. There's no rules.
okay. My first one was, I was still in school, in dance school, and we performed The Rite of Spring by Nijinsky. And the students in the school were performing with the professional company of the company in Rio. And the choreographers came to set the work. And it was just so detailed and so specific. Everything was like art. The costume, the music, the floor. There was a specific floor and they would put on the floor, the makeup, and it's Stravinsky music. Everything was just so incredible. And performing that was so rewarding. It was incredible. I'll never forget that. And the other one was more recent. It was Prodigal Son by George Balanchine. We got to do Prodigal Son in 2022, I believe. Yeah. And it was incredible. I was amazed by performing it. You know, I was first shocked that I was going to get to perform Prodigal Son. And then I was just, wow, it was one of the best performances ever. I just got to tap so deep into my artistry to perform it. And I just loved the fact that I performed this ballet that was performed by the Ballet Russe de Diaghilev. That's when George Balanchine created it. It's such a old, in a way, piece. And it's still good to today, you know, still being performed today. And I loved it. It was definitely very remarkable.
Makes you want to do some ballet now. Like a
Yes, you
class, yeah.
should.
Oh, I love ballet. Hearing you talk about it and your passion for dance makes me want to dance.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I enjoyed our talks and I learned a lot, and I'm just excited to see you on your journey. What else is next for you know?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. It was great conversation. It was fun to just go down memory lane and talk about things and just share everything that's going on with me. So I appreciate it.
And you can follow Fabio at the Fabio Mariano on Instagram, and then follow Blackson Ballet at Blackson Ballet on Instagram. Make sure to DM him about his crochet creations at Fabiola's Crochet. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me again.
And stay tuned for another episode next month.